Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is always good to join you at the end of the week to play the game of catch-up. And boy, there's lots of stuff to catch up on. Those of you familiar with my program know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Today, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, deals with the issue, allegedly, of enforcing our immigration laws from within the interior of the United States, something that I was involved with for 26 of my 30 years with the old INS. Started as an immigration inspector, did it for about 4 years at Kennedy Airport, where, as I put it, when I helped the state of Arizona defend itself against the outrageous lawsuit filed by the Department of Justice, I described my four-year stint as an inspector as a time that I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door. And today, it's the officials, the offices of CBP, Customs and Border Protection, whose eye has been held to the front door of America. But, of course, the back door is wide open, and there isn't much being done in the way of scrutinizing folks seeking to enter the United States, given all the threats that we face, whether it's the drug cartels, whether it's the threat of terrorism, criminals, or even potential competition for Americans who are unable to find decent jobs here in these United States. Rather than go into a long story about how I spent 30 years of my adult life working for the government, I would urge that you check out three websites. First of all, my own personal website is michaelcutler.net. That's one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I also have another website, talkborder.com. That's one word, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R. And finally, I am and have been for a number of years affiliated with a terrific organization known as CAPS, C-A-P-S. It's an acronym, and it stands for Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located, as they would like to tell you, in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, on the West Coast. A great place to be, great place to visit. I've certainly been there a number of times, made some great friends out there, and enjoy working with those folks. But in fact, if you think we have a problem with immigration in the rest of the country, I think California got slammed first. But that's not to say that we're just dealing with four border states. Certainly that contributes mightily, because, you know, I always like to make the point that we have 50 border states. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport or lies along America's northern border as well as its southern border must be considered border state. So that pretty much defines every one of our 50 states as being border states. So it's kind of laughable when we hear this nonsense emanating out of Congress and out of the White House and out of the talking heads on TV about, well, first we're going to secure the border, and then we could give unknown millions of illegal aliens official identity documents and employment and all the other rights and privileges that we normally reserve to those folks who abide by the law. Absolutely remarkable. We are becoming a country. How else can I describe it? We're heading in the direction of anarchy. A recent article was called to my attention by a producer friend over at Fox News, where the administration is now threatening to use EEO, Equal Employment Opportunities, to go after employers who refuse to hire people with criminal histories. It takes my breath away. You know, just a bit of thought about that. But before I do that, I think I may have tripped over myself and left out CAPS website. That's capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. But I'll be talking about that website a little bit later again. But please go to those three websites. Now, going back to what I was saying about the insanity of this administration and using the EEO laws, equal employment laws, to punish employers who won't hire people of criminal histories. You know, I was a federal agent for 30 years. I had a top secret clearance. That clearance had to be renewed every 5 years, and it was an involved process. We hear about background checks and all this other happy nonsense, but, you know, a background check is nothing like a background investigation. I kind of like to compare it to the difference between going up to the guy at the mall that has one of those blood pressure cuffs. I'm sure you've seen them. Stick your arm in there, and I don't know if they do it for free or you give them a buck or whatever the deal is, but they inflate that cuff around your arm, and they figure out what your blood pressure is, and then thinking that that equals a clean bill of health as compared with going to a doctor who does a complete workup and takes blood specimens and does the whole nine yards. A background check is almost worthless. It just means that your fingerprints don't show up in any records here in the United States, but of course we're dealing with foreign nationals, and it's not reliable that we're going to get a proper kickback on those prints from their native country or other countries where they may have been involved in some very dangerous activities. And of course, if they're undocumented, it means that they're probably using a false name. So a false name is meaningless. Fingerprints are of questionable value. And we know that the terrorists who attacked our country so savagely on 9/11 all gamed that immigration process, the visa process, immigration benefits. They used over 300 false names or variations of false names in the aggregate. So we're really talking about national security, and then we hear about this mythology, well, when the border is secure. And, of course, most people assume that to mean the border that is supposedly separating the United States from Mexico. You know, it's found in California, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas. Certainly that's an important border. Certainly that border is not secure. And that leads me to my primary issue for the evening that I want to discuss with all of you out there. And again, I thank you for joining me, because my goal, especially in the wake of the terrorist attacks of 9/11, more than 11 years ago, it's hard to believe how quickly the time has flown, it seems as though the Main Street media is reluctant, or perhaps completely unwilling in most instances, to have a truly honest conversation about what immigration really means. When was the last time, for example, you heard anybody in talking about immigration make the point that the reason we have immigration laws is to protect innocent lives and to protect the jobs of American workers? When was the last time you heard that? Have you heard that on any of the networks? I'm going to venture a guess and tell you that you have not heard that. Everybody has been brainwashed into believing that if you want the immigration laws enforced, you're somehow a vile and evil and bigoted person, xenophobic, racist. I mean, these are all the words that I've heard bandied about. It's insulting, it's offensive, it's upsetting. I happen to be of the Jewish faith. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. It was bigotry, racism, anti-Semitism that made the Holocaust possible, that people like sheep could be led down a dark path. And the consequence was that over 6 million Jews were killed, over 13 million people altogether was slaughtered because of blind hatred. Immigration is not about blind hatred. It's about making certain that we are selective as to who we permit into the United States, and this is not selective by race or by religion or by ethnicity. It is selective by the laws that are designed to keep out the people who pose a threat to our well-being. And if you don't believe it, check out Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. It enumerates the categories of aliens we're supposed to keep out of the United States. It starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or who suffer mental illness and are extremely violent, or are sex offenders, the pedophiles, the rapists, and so forth. It talks about convicted felons and human rights violators and war criminals, members of violent gangs and terrorist organizations, people who are involved in espionage. And finally, we get to aliens who either would become public charges, and God knows we're having enough trouble taking care of America's own indigent, poor people. And it seems as though more and more Americans are joining those roles of the poor every day. It's now estimated that 1 in 6 Americans is getting food stamps, 1 in 4 American children living below the poverty line. And we're told, well, if you don't want to open the doors to the world, you're a nasty, mean, evil person, and you're mean-spirited. If Americans were all working who wanted to work, if the American dream was alive and well, then I'd say share the wealth. But what rational person would give money to charity if their own children were going to bed hungry at night? And believe me, folks, there are American kids who are having real serious problems in this country, and American families having problems. because they are unable to find meaningful employment. That is why so many homes have been forfeited to foreclosure, because it is hard to get a job that pays reasonably well. Alan Greenspan, and I'm going to beat up on Greenspan just for a moment while I wait for a good friend and my guest. Hopefully he will be able to join us. I know he's having a hectic day, and I'll tell you about him and why he's running around like a madman today, and justifiably so. But Alan Greenspan went before Chuck Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee in the U.S. Senate on April 30th, 2009. And again, I would urge you to go to capsweb.org or michaelcutler.net or talkborder.com, because I've been writing about this extensively. I don't know why the media didn't pick up on this. But Greenspan talked about how Americans with skills had become the privileged elite earning a wage premium. Wage premium. That was Greenspan's way of saying too much damn money. And he said that the goal should be to make Americans compete with foreign workers so that in the end we would eliminate or at least greatly reduce income inequality. Now, that sounds good, because we always assume inequality is bad, because all too often inequality has been based on gender, has been based on race, has been based on religion, has been based on ethnicity. And, of course, if that's what the motivation or the basis for inequality is, it's outrageous, it's illegal, and it's immoral. And I agree 100% with that. You should be paid what you're worth, period. There should be blinders on, just the way Lady Justice wears a blindfold. The way that we decide who is worth what and who should get which job should also be blind as to race, religion, gender, age, and so forth. But that wasn't what Mr. Greenspan was talking about, because he said that he wanted to eliminate any kind of inequality in wage based on skill. Now, I want you to stop and think about that. In Greenspan's world, the guy with the PhD or the guy who dropped out of high school, they should be making roughly the same wage, because all that differentiates them is skill or education. Stunning, isn't it? That's what communism was about, you know, to each according to his needs, from each according to his ability. The American dream, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm sure you will agree with me, was based on the concept that those who had the education, the skills, the talents, the unique capabilities, who were most industrious and most productive, should make more than the people that weren't as trained or educated or skilled or talented. That's the way it works. That's what a meritocracy is all about, where you are rewarded for achievement. But not in Greenspan's world. Well, I see that my buddy Mark Hager is on the line. Let me bring Mark on, then I'm going to explain why he's here. Happy Friday, Mark.
Happy Friday. At least it's not the 13th.
At least it's not the 13th, but you've got a lot to celebrate. Before I let you say it, let me just introduce you to my audience. Mark Hager, we've kind of adopted each other, I think. He's a North Carolinian. I've had the privilege of being a house guest not once but twice at his beautiful home. Amazing place to live. It's out in the boondocks, at least to a New Yorker it is, out in the wilds. You know, he's got cattle living next door, and I think he goes out there periodically just to scare the cows. That's our ongoing joke. But Mark is a history professor. And he was looking at the immigration issue much the same way that here I am in New York City, the same issue. And he and his friends got together and put together a documentary called Freedom Under Fire. Well, they've just released the sequel late last night. I am very proud to have a part in it. I was actually filmed at my home, and we did some street filming also in one neighborhood where it's really the financial drain through which so much of America's money disappears, drug money, amassed by illegal aliens working in violation of law. But they did this amazing film, and it's about the nexus between supposed border security and national security. I mean, they're interchangeable. You know, a country without secure borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. And so Mark and I got together. They were kind enough to come up to New York, to the Big Apple. I think we kind of scared him. He's not used to big cities. He's a country boy. Although I found myself out of my element in North Carolina, I guess, but I really enjoyed being there, and I can't wait to get back there. It's a beautiful place. But we looked at what goes on, not just at the border, the southern border, but what ultimately happens in places like New York because of the southern border, because of those other failures. It's a compelling film. And this isn't about anybody making money off of this. This isn't, you're not going to hear them talking about this at the end of the weekend when they talk about how Spielberg's latest movie grossed, you know, $58 gazillion. No, they've actually put their film on the internet so everyone can see it for free. An amazing act of altruism by some true patriotic Americans. And I'm proud to consider them friends as well as colleagues. And if you go to my website, you'll be able to see it. We'll give out the link there and elsewhere. But I really want you guys to see the film. And if you see it, I want you to let everybody else see it. My goal, folks, is to create what I've come to call a bucket brigade of truth so that the stuff that we're not hearing on the news that we should be hearing will be disseminated through alternative means. This program is one of those alternative means. Mark Hager, I've used up enough of your time. Welcome to my program, and thank you for everything you're doing. How has today been going since the release of your film?
We're still back and forth with emails and telephone calls and things of that nature. But the actual release of it, you know, you have we sent you a link already, but it's not officially just placed like all over YouTube.
Right.
Tea Party Patriots is putting together a big article, even though this is not about Tea Party Patriots, as you know, but it's an interest that they have had in it and an interest that they support, and they're putting up an article to be released. I think they told me Monday after the interview.
Okay.
Tea Party Patriots, it'll be up on its site, and the link that I sent to you, you know, it's feel free to put it up on your website.
Okay.
To link it to it, because if not, it'll be a YouTube out in the public link a little bit later on. But
okay.
our goal with it is to get people looking at these sites and looking at immigration closer. And especially all of those of you out there that are listening who have ever given an oath to support and defend the Constitution, well, this particular documentary is going right down the gullet of Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution. And it's a wonderful document. It's a shame that it seems like many Americans won't read a small pamphlet of the U.S. Constitution. But they'll do so many other things. And you just assume that. Did you see Nancy Pelosi on TV a while back? She was stating when she was asked about the right to keep and bear firearms, and she said that she supported the First Amendment totally. And, you know,
well,
I guess she was
expressing herself.
I guess so. And you just shake your head to where if that is the leadership in politics today, then...
Well, you know, they say that she had the right to assemble peaceably. I guess she was assembling pieces of her intellect peaceably.
And, you know,
as
a teacher, these are the ones that our students today and others are supposed to look up to and to make statements like that. And then it makes sense as to why when you head down to the Arizona border and in other areas, you shake your head because nothing is getting out. And these places are wide open. And, folks, I mean, there is nothing. There is no Border Patrol. There is nothing. Zero. Nada. Whatever other word you want to put into it, and we've got that in the documentary. You go up to Newark Shipyard, and you look at, what would you say, tens of thousands of containers?
Yep.
We have no idea.
As far as the eye could see, almost, you know.
And a guy with the ship authority said that they don't look in those containers, not unless, you know, something has come to them that they need to. And they just come right in and go right into the heartland of America. And then you got the international border with Canada. And I told Mike earlier on the phone today, you know, that a guy called me up who saw our documentary and said, you need to come up here to Minnesota because they're not checking anything coming in off the ships up that way. So,
by the way, I want to do something. You had mentioned Article 4, Section 4. So in case, you know, Ms. Pelosi is listening, because I'm sure you've just confused the hell out of her, she'd probably be thinking, Article what? So let me read it. It's just a sentence, but Nancy Pelosi, if you or any of your brethren are out there listening, this is what Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution that you took an oath to defend and uphold has to say. Now, here it is. It's very short. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not talking about domestic violence, about a husband smacking his wife or the wife hitting the husband over the head with a skillet. We're talking about the incursion of foreign criminals onto American soil. We're being told by Janet Napolitano, the head of DHS, and those of you familiar with the program know what DHS stands for. It's the Department of Homeland Surrender, correct?
Correct.
So the Department of Homeland Surrender says, we're safe. The border is secure. However, hundreds of American cities have become infested by the Mexican cartels, the same cartels that, while Felipe Calderon was in office as president of Mexico, killed over 60,000 Mexicans. They're here in America doing business and expanding their tentacles into every community, making ever more money in the drug trade, carrying out crimes of violence in support of the drug trade. And you should know that drugs are involved in, I've seen estimates of about 70-75% of all crimes, directly and indirectly, there's a nexus to narcotics. So we're told that the Constitution says we're supposed to be protected against domestic violence and against invasion. I don't know how else you can define this except an invasion. On 9/11, we were invaded by terrorists. So what in the world does Ms. Pelosi think it is that this government is supposed to do when she thinks about our Constitution? You're the history professor here, Mark. Am I getting something sideways? What are your thoughts?
Well, my thought is that I don't think she's ever read the Constitution. I mean, I don't want to make fun of her, but I just personally, I think she has a vague memory of the Constitution. But I don't think she has actually sat down and read it on herself.
Do you know of any coloring books that incorporate the Constitution? Maybe that would be something she could relate to. She was one of the people that was screaming about connecting the dots after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to get her a coloring book so maybe she can play connect the dots. You know, we used to go to those restaurants when we were kids, the diners, the children's menu had meals like giraffe. I mean, they didn't really serve you a giraffe or an elephant or a zebra. They used to give you little things you could do to keep occupied, connect the dots and color in the things. Maybe we could find a constitution on that kind of a placemat and mail it to Nancy Pelosi. What do you think?
I think that would be, but it's not just her.
I agree with you.
I think making a point to where if the former House Speaker doesn't understand the Constitution, then, you know, the people who put her in that position.
And it's in the line of succession to the presidency. I mean, how scary is that? And by the way, I'm registered as a Democrat, folks. This isn't about beating up on the Democratic Party. It's beating up on the fools on the Hill that we collectively call Congress.
Exactly, and the people that we have elected here of late, after going through some of this research and working on this documentary, and you realize that it seems to me that both parties are asleep at the wheel on this, and they're so busy playing their own political games that in the meantime, we're losing our security piece after piece after piece each day, and I just don't see
lives. You know, Congressman Steve King, who's a real good guy, co-chair of the Immigration Subcommittee, did a news conference on the steps of the Capitol. He said that he did some research based on a statement I'd made at a hearing when he had asked me how many people lose their lives every year to illegal aliens. Well, I didn't know, and I don't guess. You know, either I know or I don't know. And I said, I have no idea, but I would assure you that it's a multiple of the number of people who died on 9/11. Well, he was so astonished by that statement that I gave him that he did his own study and came up with the number of 7,000 people per year killed by aliens who should not be in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So people are losing their lives. The economy of the United States is losing over $100 billion in remittances from illegal aliens working in the United States. The cartels, from studies I have seen, are moving well over that amount, so it's another 100 plus billion to the drug trade. It's probably twice that or more. So this is money that doesn't get invested in America, spent in America. Quite the contrary, it has a harmful effect because people are dying because of the drug trade, because of crimes committed by addicts looking to get money so they can buy their next fix, violence perpetrated, where the head of DEA in Chicago, Jack Riley, who had previously been posted to the DEA's El Paso office, described Chicago, parts of Chicago, as resembling a border town. And I don't know if you saw this, Mark, but do you know who public enemy number one in Chicago now is as of last week?
Well, to me, it goes even further. You have El Chapo is like the new godfather.
That's right.
Of Chicago.
He's actually public enemy number one. Chicago declared El Chapo Guzman, the head of the Sinaloa drug cartel, who has never set foot in Chicago to their knowledge.
Well, they
he is their public enemy number one. And what their law enforcement officers said, per the newspapers, was that Al Capone at one time had been public enemy number one, but Capone did not have nearly the reach nor the level of control or pose the level of threat that El Chapo Guzman has in Chicago today, sitting as he does in Mexico. But our border, we're told, is secure. And with that segue, why don't you tell everybody what you saw when you went down and filmed on the border? Because I think that really kind of gets to the heart of where we're going. What do you think?
It really does. And you can go with just exactly what you just mentioned with Chicago. One of the things I was astounded about in filming was that Operation Fast and Furious, just before we got details of it, you had the Attorney General with the Department of Justice, Eric Holder in charge, put out a figure that 90% of the guns coming in or going into the hands of the cartels in Mexico were coming from the United States. That was people argued with it, and then came out, lo and behold, that only 12% of the guns that Mexico had seized actually came out of the United States. And Operation Fast and Furious went in. And if we're complaining about the guns in Mexico, why would Eric Holder put out that report of 90% guns that was false and then turn around and send thousands of guns into the hands of the Sinaloa cartel with El Chapo in charge? And then they sent Janet Napolitano's BORTEC unit with Brian Terry, which is part of the Department of Homeland Surrender.
Let me just slow you up a bit. Brian Terry was killed by at least one of those guns. He was a Border Patrol agent, an American hero. He had returned from active duty as a soldier in Iraq and gets shot to death on American soil when they're confronted by members of the Mexican cartels inside the United States, just in case some people out there have forgotten. With all the stuff coming at us, you know, it's like standing in front of Niagara Falls with a water bucket trying to catch all the water sometimes.
So we went there, and we went to Peck Canyon where the incident occurred.
And that's in Arizona, correct?
Right. It's in Cochise County, Arizona. We went to that location and looked at how they were deployed, and they were facing the wrong direction, had 30 people approaching them in their intelligence, and at least 6 to 8 they already knew were armed with AK-47s, but they gave this elite BORTEC unit beanbag guns and some small arms to go after them. And
talk about bringing a knife to a gunfight.
I know, and that is just where it starts. And then you go and look at $40 million plus areas of the fence. No one's watching it. You can stand out there and shout and scream and wave your hands for hours, and you won't see a Border Patrol person anywhere. And gates are wide open in the Sonora Desert.
Now, you talk about gates. I saw it in the film. Describe the gates we're talking about. Is this like big enough that a guy on a bicycle could drive through? I mean, what kind of a gaping hole are we talking about?
These gates are over 7 feet tall, over 7 feet wide.
You're talking about the gaps, the spaces. There.
Yes. You can drive a Super Duty F-350 pickup truck through it with no problem at all day long and all night. And the reason that they're open is because in the Sonora Desert, they actually have a rainy season. And just in case any sand or anything would be washed around that area, they don't want to go out there and have to clean it up periodically. So they lift the gates up, and we're not talking one gate here. It'll be a whole section. The gates will be left wide open. And, in fact, since we were out there, there was too many gates. They had to keep opening and closing, so they just tore out a whole section of the fence that's over 40 feet wide. And, you know, they would leave it open for 3 months out of the year, no one watching it, nobody. And no matter what Border Patrol or anybody would say, we were there for hours. And then, in fact, we turned around and left because Sheriff Deaver wanted to take us to an observation point in another part of the county. And as we were leaving, we had to turn around and rush back because, sure enough, a truck came through right through one of those gates, a white Nissan crew cab. We missed seeing it, but it got away. But our thought was that they were probably upset that we were slowing them down by being over there with cameras filming these wide-open gates.
How did the Border Patrol react to you being out there with cameras, by the way?
Well, they don't particularly like cameras out there. But we have we had a member of the sheriff's office with us, you know, with a big sheriff across its back. And so they stay away from that. Anyhow,
do you think if you were there in an ordinary vehicle without a sheriff that you might have been told not to tape?
Oh, I know they would have, because they've told the ranchers that if they apprehend anybody on the ranch and they have a camera out, they are not to take any photographs on their own personal property.
Now, wait a moment. You're telling me that we have, let's go back to that First Amendment that Pelosi was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What law are you violating if you're standing on your own property taking photographs?
That would be multiple. One, they're trespassing on your property.
Right. But I'm saying,
under
what law
property
could you be told don't photograph anything on your own property? Does that make any sense to anybody out there?
No, it doesn't.
I mean, this is, to me, this is mind-numbing. I mean, this defies belief. This is the United States of America. Now, I understand that they don't want, there was a time when in New York after 9/11, there were big signs saying, don't film the tunnels, don't film the bridges. They was concerned that the bad guys might be looking for vulnerabilities and places to plant explosives and so forth. And that might make sense, to be honest about that. But you're standing on your property in the middle of nowhere. Strategically, there's nothing that anybody can blow up. We're talking about, you know, level ground, and they didn't want photos taken. The only thing that comes to my cynical mind, and what do I know, but, you know, just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean you're not being followed, is that they don't want people to know what's really happening on the border that our government is supposed to secure. What do you think about my theory?
Well, you're right on, and as Deaver had, you know, would kind of bring that out to where they tried to rearrange the figures of who is apprehended and how they're apprehended to make the figures look better. So if you have 100 people run across and they arrest three, then they'll say only three people came across the border and they arrested them.
Do you think maybe, you know, I just had an idea, because, you know, when people are in prison, they probably get bored. It's good to get prisoners working for their keep. Maybe Bernie Madoff, you know, could cook their numbers for them. What do you think?
Well, I think he already does. This is everyday life in that area. And there are, even in the local paper sometimes, they don't really hear of just what has happened along that border. People in Tucson are in many cases just as unsure about what's happening on the border as the people in, say, I don't know, Kansas City, even though Tucson is less than an hour away. That's how the media is just keeps a tight lip on what's pouring across them. And, of course, when they say that listen, there's not all this much violence in, say, a single border town. The ranchers would say, they're not stopping here.
Right.
they're just passing through. They're damaging things as they come through. And one rancher in particular, after your house has been burglarized 16 times, they stop calling. You call the sheriff's office or somebody else, this would be like number 20.
I'm forced to think about Joe Biden, a.k.a. the Joker, who gave firearms advice to his wife purportedly, telling her that if she heard somebody suspicious outside the house, she should grab their 2x2 shotgun and fire a couple of warning shots. Whoever heard of using a shotgun to fire warning shots? And then what do you do to protect yourself after you've expended the two rounds that it holds? I just look at this whole theater of the absurd. I don't think we've ever been in a situation like this before, have we, Mark?
Well, obviously Joe Biden doesn't know anything about firearms. That's the way I look at what his comment was.
With or without the training he purportedly got from his dad, huh?
Whatever he says makes absolutely no sense. If she feels like she needs to have a Glock with a 10-15 round clip, then if it was your wife and she gets out there and she's trained, she can shoot it well, then she should be able to carry that. And she would probably feel happier with 10 rounds at a group of people coming in than a shotgun with two.
It's just, to me, this whole thing is the theater of the absurd. And now I just got an email, by the way, that a former official at Citicorp is going to be steering the effort to ram comprehensive immigration reform down our throat. Here we go again, and it comes back to the banks. So here's my next segue for you.
Mm-hmm.
I dragged you guys up to the Big Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember, in fact, my wife was with us, Susan was with us in the car, and you guys were all in the back of my minivan. And I was just giving you a sneak preview of Roosevelt Avenue, thinking it would be relatively quiet. It was after midnight. I think it was about 12:30 in the morning. And I said, well, let me just show you what you're going to be looking at tomorrow. It was kind of funny. I was glad you had your camera with you because you wound up filming. What did we find at the middle of the night, 12:30 at night?
I've never seen banks. Of course, even Charlotte, when you think of North Carolina, banks open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and people, actively going in to wire money at, it's a 12, 2 o'clock in the morning. It just doesn't make sense to me that somebody would wake up and say, oh, man, I forgot to wire this money to El Salvador. I need to go now.
You don't think there's that many insomniacs running around, huh?
No, I don't think so. And you mentioned about the panic over the defense cuts that are supposed to happen, $84 billion?
Yep.
And one bank alone, Wachovia Bank, based at here in North Carolina, now owned by Wells Fargo, they were caught, laundering $378 billion. And that would – how many defense sequesters would that cover?
Well, I'm not sure if it was laundering or at least remitting it, but the point was that money washed through them out of the United States. And now understand what we're talking about. The banks are making a ton of money because any of you who have a checking account or a credit card or any kind of an account, they charge fees for everything today. I remember when I was a kid, they didn't charge you a fee to make a withdrawal. We all used to have our little bank accounts that we all took out, savings accounts, to encourage kids to learn how to save. So we could actually go into a bank with a student bank book and deposit pennies at a time into the account. There was no charge for it. You could go there anytime you want and say, I'd like to withdraw $3, and they'd hand you $3 with a big smile. Now, if you go to the machine to check your balance, they're charging you. If you try to take money out of your bank account and it's your money, they charge you. So anybody who has a bank account and they put that kind of money into the account, think of how much money they're earning. I don't know if I ever told you this story, and I want to tell it to you because I also want my audience to hear this, Mark.
Yeah.
Tom Tancredo headed up the Immigration Reform Caucus. He was out of Colorado. And, in fact, I testified for Tom about 6 weeks after 9/11 very funny story there. He had asked immigration for authority to have me come testify. Now, this is a caucus hearing, which means they couldn't issue a subpoena to protect me. And I had to make a decision whether I was willing to do it if the agency said no, and in fact, they said no. The INS first said yes, then they said no, and they wouldn't have any further conversation. So I went and testified. And there were people from headquarters scribbling notes like crazy as I was speaking, taking down everything I had to say. It was kind of, I think they were there to intimidate me, and I was actually told the next day I was no longer an agent because of my leg injury. They were removing me. I mean, it was pretty clear that there was a nexus between Mike Cutler testifies and so forth. But what's interesting about Tancredo was that one of the issues that he had pushed was that we should be taxing remittances being wired from the United States out of the United States, because this is money being lost to our economy. This is money very often that was ill-gotten, people violating the law to work. And think about this. One of the strategies that law enforcement is increasingly turning to punish people who violate the law and wind up with money that's ill-gotten is asset forfeiture. You know, drive drunk in New York, we take your car. Fail to pay taxes, we'll take your bank book. Traffic in illegal materials, we'll seize your house, your jewelry, your car, anything we can get our hands on. Asset forfeiture. But people that earn money illegally are allowed to take that money home with them. Tancredo said, you know what the solution is? Let's tax the money. Next thing you know, there was a company called First Data Corporation that was headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia. Charlie Foate, F-O-T-E, Charlie Foate was the head of First Data Corp at the time, moved his company, First Data Corp, from Atlanta to Colorado, Tancredo's hometown. Now, you might ask, why did he do it? First Data Corp, back then, was the parent organization, guess to what? Western Union. And I had read an account that at that point, Western Union was making, this is not what they moved, but the money they got paid, over $1 billion, with a B, every year to move money out of the United States. So he formed a political action committee, and I guess he was taking the advice of the Godfather, and said, well, keep your friends close, your enemies closer. He moved First Data Corp, parent of Western Union, to Tom Tancredo's backyard. Why? Because Tancredo said, let's tax the money. This is all about money, folks. When I testified before Congress in 2005, I found out that the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services, a guy by the name of Eduardo Aguirre, had said that his three priorities, priority one was to clear up the backlog of applications for citizenship and residency. Priority two was improve customer service. Priority three, you won't believe this, enhance national security. Well, I went crazy because here I was preparing my own testimony for a hearing that I was about to testify at by the House Immigration Subcommittee on whether or not they had adequate resources, because President Bush refused to hire as many agents as he was authorized to hire by Congress. And I looked up Eduardo Aguirre because I wondered what kind of a knucklehead would make national security a third priority behind customer service. It turned out that previously he had been employed by the Bank of America as the president of the International Bank of the Bank of America, the first bank, by the way, to accept Mexican matricula cards, which flew in the face of the advice of a guy by the name of Stephen McGraw, because he testified before the same subcommittee in 2003, and he said that those matricula cards were a threat to national security. You have to presume that McGraw knew what he was talking about, because at the time, he was the head of intelligence for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So when you connect those dots, look at where the banks are in the scheme of things. Doesn't that paint a pretty clear picture to you?
Yeah. It would be pretty good if they could seize the $378 billion and bring it back.
Yeah, but remember, that bank is probably too big to fail, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, and
too
then
big
yeah, they
to fail. Don't you love that one?
And there were a number of banks, some not long ago, but they barely make a mention in the news, and I have yet to see that anything happened except for they had to pay a penalty.
And isn't it remarkable that Mayor Bloomberg is all torqued about women not breastfeeding their children, about big drinks that have more than 16 ounces? Now he's going after styrofoam cups.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you saw Mr. Bloomberg concerned about the other white powder besides sugar and salt? And I'm talking about heroin and cocaine. Isn't it remarkable that we've never heard a word come out of his mouth about heroin or cocaine?
And it never comes up on, you know, even down here, I don't see any, there's nothing on TV or anything like there used to be, at least somewhat, with at least just the old days when they say no to drugs, or this is your brain
on drugs, and they would show a frying egg in the pan.
And then now that you don't see that at all, now it's, you know, don't put salt on your French fries or...
I'm waiting for the kid that gets arrested with some white powder in his lunchbox. No, not heroin or cocaine, but he brings along an extra salt shaker.
Yeah, and you got Hezbollah and other groups right there on the border giving tunnel digging technology and teaching the use of IEDs, but we're concerned about...
And IEDs, by the way, originally the technology came straight out of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike McCall, by the way, who is now the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, and it's people like Mike McCall, Steve King, and I got to tell you, there's one guy who, if he ever decides to have a fan club, I've already let it be known that I want the position of president of his fan club, and that's a gentleman by the name of Lou Barletta. Lou Barletta was the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. He was the mayor of Hazleton. He was the first mayor to enact ordinances to combat illegal immigration by going after anybody who would intentionally hire illegal aliens or provide housing to illegals, not out of xenophobia, but because suddenly this town that he had grown up in was witnessing a level of violence that they'd never seen before. People were getting killed where they may have gone a decade without a murder. He had multiple homicides within, I believe, a year. First guy killed was a guy who approached members of MS-13. He saw them selling drugs openly in a park where the kids were playing. Then he told them, hey, you guys got to knock that off. And they just walked up to him and capped him in the head in broad daylight, as I understand it. So you look at this madness, and Lou Barletta stands there and says, I'm not going to put up with this. I was actually his final witness when he was sued by the ACLU for doing the right thing. And you know, all these groups that are screaming about how terrible it is that we want the laws enforced have forgotten why we have immigration laws. It's part of Article 4, Section 4, but it's also about protecting innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. If we did a massive amnesty program, we would wind up giving tens of millions of illegal aliens who are undocumented. And I'm glad the open borders crowd calls them undocumented. That's an important word for you to remember. They did it to make it sound as though it's not really serious, and it started with Jimmy Carter. But undocumented folks should scare the hell out of you. And I'll tell you, as an agent with 30 years, it scares me because it means they don't have any identity documents that are trustworthy. It's the equivalent of getting on an airplane and flashing an index card at the TSA that in pencil you scribble your name on. Undocumented means they can't or maybe won't provide reliable, authentic documentation to attest to who they are. The documents they lack are proof of who they are and why they're here. So we would give those millions of people official identity documents without being able to do face-to-face interviews, without being able to do background investigations in the street. They would just run the name that could be fictitious against the database, run their fingerprints, which may not show up because if they were never arrested in the United States and they ran the border, those prints are not on file. This is how the terrorists attacked us, not only in 2001, but in 1993. And this week, by the way, is the anniversary, the 20th anniversary of the first attack at the World Trade Center. It almost brought the towers down sideways. 20 years ago this week, I believe it was the 26th of February. So you look at this lunacy, and we're being told that we're xenophobic if we want to give people citizenship, when in point of fact, we already admit 1.1 million plus lawful immigrants into America every year. That system has enough holes in it that it looks like Swiss cheese, but we are admitting people through our legal system in such numbers that it exceeds the rest of the world. When you were walking or driving through those neighborhoods, didn't you see people who would appear as though they were probably from the four corners of the planet? This isn't just about Mexico, is it, Mark?
No. you go down to, you got to bear in mind we were in one big county, but small right. in comparison to the whole border with Mexico. And you have Muslim prayer rugs. which are in the documentary. You have a book that turned up about in just not long, well, 2011, late in 2011, a book dedicated to jihadist martyrs and had their names, pictures, and where they were from and what had happened.
And phone numbers were in the books.
The one book that we were talking about, I went to the ranch to see, you know, had Iranian numbers, Canadian numbers. And this is just, and the other ranchers will say, well, you need to go and see this rancher. They've recovered some sort of Muslim trinkets here or in another one on down the road.
And when you say recovered, where did they find them?
I say what now?
You said that they were recovered. Where did they find these items?
Right on the ranches, on the ground. Some of them were thinking
along the Mexican
like,
border.
Along the Mexican border. And, well, one of the diary that came up in which they put security around Palo Alto nuclear plant, that one, I believe, was about 18 miles into the United States. So, and you got to bear in mind, this is only an 83-mile sector where these things are popping up, and the ranchers will say, well, this one down the road has this, that one down the road has that. So, and we were only in a small piece of a pie. It's 1,900 miles long.
And we still don't know what's coming across the Canadian border or through
we don't.
You know, we have 95,000 miles of coastline in the United States.
My mindset is that I know they're here. Congressman Sue Myrick out of Charlotte, North Carolina, tried to make inquiries and didn't get any responses to Homeland Security back in 2010. And so, it's obvious that they're in here. How many? I mean, I'm looking at thousands, and they keep giving us a immigration statistic that goes back to 2006 of 11 million, assuming, I guess, no one else ever came in since 2006.
Yeah, the possibility is real good about that, right?
But they keep saying these things over, like you've mentioned several times. You just keep telling the public there's only 11 million, and after a few years of telling everybody there's only 11 million, I guess people believe there's only 11 million.
Well, it's the idea of the big lie. You know, this was what the Nazis did during the Holocaust. They called it the idea of the big lie. You tell a whopper of a lie, you just keep repeating it every chance you get, and after a while, it's like an urban legend. It takes on a life of its own, and people automatically presume, oh, yeah, well, that's how it works. Just like people have said to me, they're so fixated on the border. I can't tell you, Mark, how many times people have come up to me. When I was at Chapman Law School, and Mike Chertoff spoke there, and I was there, these attractive young ladies came up to me as we were leaving the Nixon Library where we had dinner, and one of them said to me, well, Mr. Cutler, do you think we're ever going to get that fence on the border completed? As though this is the be-all and end-all of America's national security. And we're hearing it again, once the fence is complete, once the border is secure. And I said,
it won't matter.
A fence on the border is the equivalent of a wing on an airplane. Okay.
Yeah,
without the wing, the airplane won't fly, but the wing by itself goes nowhere. This is part of an immigration system. You know, I just wrote an article for AIM, Accuracy in Media. Again, if you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, and I referenced it in a commentary I wrote for capsweb.org, and I wrote another article for Caps Web that I called Immigration and Occam's Razor. We were just talking about it earlier today. Occam's Razor is a principle in philosophy and in mathematics that says that when trying to figure out the solution to a problem, usually the simplest solution is the right one. It's usually considered the most elegant also, rather than some Rube Goldberg. You always look for the simplest solution. So I went a step further, and I was being a little sarcastic. My anger sometimes comes out in strange ways. I have a hair trigger brain. I never know when it's going to go off. I said, if you can't get your car to start, maybe it makes more sense to check the gas gauge before you order an engine overhaul. What do you think of that principle for Occam's Razor?
That's good.
We're told the system is broken. Do you know what's broken about the system, ladies and gentlemen? We don't have enforcement. Nature's laws exist because they're nature's laws. The speed of light does not depend on some guy with a radar gun and a summons book. It's 186,300 miles per second, give or take, in a vacuum. It just is. But speed laws are meaningless unless they're enforced. Get on a highway where there's no enforcement, and it looks like the Indy 500. Because without enforcement, you have anarchy. It becomes meaningless. What this administration has done, and the administrations before it, but this one is absolutely the flat-out worst. They get the award, and they should be given the MVP award by Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah and Hamas. What they have done is to fire the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens around the world. The word is out. You come to America, you run that border, and once you're here, you are here. For those aspiring illegal aliens, our border is the finish line for their race.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world do you protect a country without the manpower and by giving agents the instructions that they better not arrest anybody? They're being told, believe it or not, and there was just a hearing about this over at the Senate Judiciary Committee. They brought in an agent who was suspended because he refused to listen to orders and actually arrested an illegal alien, and he said, let's let an immigration judge make the decision. I'm not going to deport the guy myself. He's here in violation of law. He put the cuffs on him and said he needs to see an immigration judge. That got him suspended. So understand what's now happening. Agents are afraid to do their job, and we don't have agents anyway. We have about 7,000 immigration agents for the entire interior of the United States of America. To put this in perspective, the NYPD, the New York City Police Department, now has about 35,000 cops. There was a time we had 41,000. And right now, Bloomberg and all the others are wringing their hands and saying, oh boy, we're worried about the crime rate. We only have 35,000 cops. Well, guess what? We have fewer than 10% as many ICE agents for the entire 50 United States of America than we have police officers just for this little city of New York. And I believe that the city of New York covers something like 400 square miles or less. So a tiny little area in terms of, you know, size, although it's highly congested and highly packed, has 35,000 cops. ICE has about 3,000 agents for the whole country, and they are under orders basically to not do their jobs. You know why the system is broken? Because we're not enabling it to work. It's not the laws that are bad. It's not the concepts that are bad. Yes, we could tweak the laws. There are things that I would probably change, make little refinements here and there. And I did that previously when I worked with Senator D'Amato back in the early 80s and convinced him we needed to make reentry for criminal aliens a 20-year felony. The crime of reentry was almost never enforced, because it used to simply be a two-year crime, and most times the prosecutors would say, look, we don't have the resources. By the time we get this guy found guilty, he's going to get time served anyway. Why bother? So we got the law changed so that criminal aliens are treated differently from non-criminals. They face 20 years max. You know what the result is, Mark? About half of all federal prosecutions now involve immigration law violations. See, there are solutions, but they are based on effective enforcement. That's what's broken, and that's what nobody is talking about. And they're still ignoring interior enforcement by keeping everyone's attention drawn to the border. If tomorrow morning we legalize 30 million illegal aliens, nothing would change except we would have compromised our national security irrevocably. The onslaught would continue. We would still encourage more illegals to come here, and it's not just the Mexican border. It's estimated that there are between 5 and 10 million status violators, people who came in with visas. And do you know what, Mark? They're now saying, what do we do with those overstays and the people that worked illegally? We don't know who they are or where they are. Now, here's the secret nobody knows about, or a few people know. One of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony, was that they need to develop a program known as U.S. Visit that would track the entry and departure of non-immigrant aliens, people that were here for a temporary visit. They went to the Accenture Company, which is a spinoff of the Arthur Andersen accounting firm of Enron Notoriety, and they said to them, we'll pay you, devise a system. Over the years, they got over $1 billion, with a B. Here we are a decade later, and guess what? They still have no idea. And you know what's remarkable about them? What's remarkable is they are an offshore company. When they got the contract, they were headquartered in Hamilton, Bermuda. They are now headquartered in Ireland. And I think there's an ulterior motive here, too. There's a program called the Visa Waiver Program. which enables aliens from certain countries to come to America without having to first get a visa. And a visa really gives us a significant layer of security. It's an extra fence to jump, if you will. In essence, it pushes America's borders out to consulates and embassies overseas, which makes sense. When 9/11 happened, there were either 26 or 27 visa waiver countries. Well, we're now up to 37. November 1st last year, Taiwan was added to the list. So look what's happened. We keep expanding the visa waiver countries because the Chamber of Commerce wants it, because they're all about profit at any cost, even apparently if it means compromising national security, which, by the way, was the point made by Mr. Colson, the former DEA agent, who said that in the name of trade we've compromised national security, which is exactly what I'm saying now, and Colson made that point in your movie.
Yeah.
And so there were two conditions to be a part of the visa waiver program. You could not have a visa refusal rate of more than, I think, 3% of the citizens of that country. Well, you can control that. All they do is go to the consular officials and tell them, you better approve almost all the applications for visas. That's easy. What isn't easy is, what do you do when people overstay their visas, because now there would be a record? You know what you do? You make sure that that system is never fully implemented. So that requirement that we don't have more than a 3% overstay rate has gone out the window, because they don't track it. It's don't ask, don't tell. This is how screwed up we have become, so that corporations can make money off of trade. But in the end, the compromise that we're looking at isn't just political compromise. It's compromising national security. Is that insanity?
Yes, it is. And we're doing it continually. And, I really would think that the American public, if they look around, that they can feel that something is not right. I just can't seem to think that people feel that there is nothing wrong with having millions of illegal aliens in the United States. They have to be able to notice their depressed wages that are taking place, and
right,
whenever they open up their paychecks now this year and see that more taxes are coming out, and then you look at the horrendous cost of Obamacare, which is getting higher and higher, and then start peeling it back and go, there has got to be a reason why there is so much cost everywhere.
What are you finding in North Carolina? I mean, what's been happening to the crime rate in North Carolina? I'm curious.
Well, on the more violent type crimes, you know, they have gone up here in this state. And you go to like your local county jails, and let me see, I think we had 33 illegal aliens not long ago. I don't know the current status, but the cost to keep them in the jail per day and then give them medical, it's about $80 per day per person.
Yeah. Right,
and then you multiply it out just in the jail cells from county, and we're not a big populated county as some are, and you multiply that on out, somebody has got to pay for it. In fact, there are so many that we are at capacity at our jail here, and they're trying to talk about we're going to have to build a larger jail system to do that. It's going to take even more taxpayer money, and all that's going to do is just fill up too.
And I also believe, I remember hearing something about more drugs being seized in your neck of the woods these days.
Oh, yeah. We had a $1.4 million cash seizure alone, not to mention the drugs that were involved, as well as numerous firearms and body armor that were seized right here in the Iredell-Davie.
Body armor as well. That doesn't sound like some guy selling a couple of joints in the back of a store somewhere.
No, we were told that they believe that it was a runner for the Zeta Cartel.
The Zeta Cartel in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Well, that wouldn't be the only one.
And meanwhile, we have Nappy telling us that there's no spillover violence.
Right. That's just one. Let me see. That would be 16, 17. That would be, 17 major cartel-related busts here in North Carolina in a year's time.
In a year's time. Yeah. And I'm going to ask you a fairly simple question. 10 years ago, how often would this sort of thing have happened?
I don't know, because 10 years ago, I had no clue. I wouldn't have even...
I would suspect even, you probably didn't have much going on in North Carolina 10 years ago.
Well, I can say that when I was in high school here, and you go back into the 80s, the only foreign nationals that I had seen in my college classes was one. We had one exchange student from Germany. And, well, really, that was it. The other one was we had a Cherokee from Oklahoma that I thought was interesting because there's a little bit of a problem between the Cherokee in Oklahoma and the Cherokee that still live here in North Carolina, which I thought was amazing to hear about.
That's interesting.
And that was it. And that was in the late 80s. So,
well, you know, by the way, we're running a little bit long, folks, and we're going to keep at it just for a little bit longer because this is important information that I want you all to have, and I want you to go and check out this film that Mark Hager and his folks put together in North Carolina. Freedom Under Fire 2 is the name of it. Mm-hmm. It's very, very important. There was a GAO report that came out, and I wrote this article for CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. It's estimated that right now there are 850,000 foreign students in the United States. And to show you how screwed up we are, 6 months to the day after 9/11, I was at the time the president of a parents' association for my daughter's public school. And I went to one of those breakfasts for the parents' association presidents, and all the politicians came in and told us how they were getting us funding for this program and that funding. And that program, and Anthony Weiner was there, the guy who lived up to his last name, Weenie. My son had worked for him as an intern, and it wasn't pretty. He's a piece of work, Weenie is. And I tried to approach him, because he spoke at the event, and he tried to get past me. He said, "Mr. Cutler, I know you want to talk about immigration, but I got to get going." And I said, "You know, we were just attacked 6 months ago. The stench from the burning jet fuel and probably the bodies and everything else at Ground Zero permeated the air in New York. I mean, it was god-awful, and it was a daily reminder. You know, my town, New York City, is still suffering post-traumatic stress. Don't anyone think otherwise." And you saw the handball court, and I won't even go into it. You have to see the film to see what we're talking about the handball court wall, where I played handball from the time I was 11 years old. This is an impersonal thing for me. It was my country that was attacked. It was also my hometown that was attacked on 9/11. But Weiner said to me, and I'll never forget it, that's what made me start to think about the schools angle, because you think you have a handle on things, you keep on finding it's an ever bigger picture. It's kind of like the blind men groping the elephant. You know, one guy's got the trunk, another guy's got the tail, someone else is hanging onto the belly, someone else has the leg. They have very different ideas about what the elephant looks like in totality, but these are blind men, and they can only go by what that little piece that they have. And he said to me, if we really cracked down on immigration, schools would lose tons of money, and I'm not about to see that happen. Well, let me tell you, this really brought that all full circle. And by the way, you should know that very same day when I had this big screaming match with Weenie, I got a phone call like an hour later as I was pulling into my driveway from Sheila Jackson Lee's counsel. At the time, the gentleman's name was Leon Buck, asking me if I would testify before Congress, because I had not yet heard about it. But it turned out that here we were to the day 6 months after 9/11, and it was suddenly discovered that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, two of the people that did the hijackings, in fact, Atta was one of the ringleaders, they had been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months to the day after 9/11. Now, by then, the whole world knew that these two pieces of work were dead. Thank God they were dead. And that they had been terrorists, and that they had participated in the 9/11 attacks. But that did not deter the inept and incompetent INS from giving them authority to go to flight school. So understand that there was an integral link between the terrorists and schools and flight training. So now flash forward 11 years later, the GAO puts out a study that says that there are 850,000 students. And by the way, I testified at that hearing. I was pleased to do so. You can see a copy of it on C-SPAN or go to capsweb.org or michaelcutler.net. You can actually see that hearing. It's up there permanently on C-SPAN. It was crazy. So you would think we would have learned the lesson. Well, the GAO says we have 850,000 foreign students in the United States right now. We have 10,000 schools authorized to fill out that form I-20 that facilitates the issuance, or that's a requirement for the issuance of a student visa for a foreign national. With the number of agents available, I can assure you that not many of those schools have ever been visited by an agent or made certain that it even exists in the real world. So we don't even know if these schools exist. We have no idea where these students are. One such student, by the way, his name escapes me, wanted to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank in Lower Manhattan just about 6 months ago. He just pleaded guilty, in fact, to participating in a terrorist plot to kill lots of people here in the heart of New York City, the financial district. So
and
we know that there are some...
And that was through a college visa?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And in fact, yeah, and in fact, the FBI luckily intercepted emails he was sending out looking for people to help him put a bomb together. He put together what he thought was a bomb. Thank God the people who agreed to help him turned out to be people working in conjunction with the FBI. Otherwise, this story might be very different.
Mm-hmm.
He was a student in the Midwest, suddenly decided he needed to come to New York for English language training, even though he was getting, either a computer or an engineering degree. He wants to do high-tech education, but nobody bothered to check if he had English proficiency. I mean, this is the gang that couldn't shoot straight. So we have all these students here. The GAO report further found, I mean, this is astonishing, that on top of everything else, guess what? They found that 38% of the flight schools still don't have their paperwork filed with the FAA. And they even identified one flight school as being owned and operated by illegal aliens, and they were teaching other illegal aliens. More than a decade after the attacks of 9/11, and as we approach the 20th anniversary of the first attack at the Trade Center that killed 6 people, injured about 1,000, inflicted $500 million in damages, and almost brought those towers down sideways in 93. But meanwhile, if some guy who's almost blind, if Mr. Magoo at the airport, he's 90 years old and can't see straight, opens the wrong door at an airport and the alarm goes off, they go into lockdown. Oh, my God, intruder alert, you know, like Lost in Space, you know, danger, Will Robinson, danger, right? Everything shuts down. They bring airplanes back to the gate. They take the baggage out. That's a big deal. The fact that every day God knows who's running across the border, who's entering the United States, who's getting here one way or the other, and what they're doing when they get here, totally ignored. Just don't do it at an airport. Is that the only place where we're vulnerable? I mean, this is the dumbest thing I've seen in my life, and it has a real-world implication, folks. What it really talks to is the fact that we are not safe here inside the United States. And, you know, what you really need to understand is that people keep talking about military on the border. I'm going to tell you something that you probably never thought about. There is a way in which the military is already on the border. Their mission is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. So you could say that, in a manner of speaking, they are trying to secure our borders externally to keep the enemies from getting here. It's up to the Department of Homeland Surrender to keep the border secure up close and in person and from within the interior of the United States, backstopping both the Border Patrol and the inspectors at the ports of entry. When DHS fails at its mission, and it fails every single day the sun rises, let me tell you, it fails abysmally, they are undermining the gallantry, they are undermining the commitment, and they are undermining the incredible sacrifices of the American men and women in uniform of the military, because the military is doing their job, DHS is failing to do its job. And so this is now the agency that we're being told will give God knows how many millions of illegal aliens a pathway to citizenship, dump millions of foreign workers into a labor pool that can't find work, and we're supposed to be jumping up and down and saying, right on, giving people who are lying about their identities and when they got here and how they got here official identity documents, and we're supposed to be saying, this is great. See, people say, well, what if they've been living here for the last 11 years? And my question to you, ladies and gentlemen, is how do you know? How do you know how long someone has been living here if you don't have the resources to go out there and knock on doors and show photographs and get information from people out there who can either verify the information or tell you that it's false information? Because I used to do that job for 30 years. Believe me, there's no easy way. I spoke at a Republican Party event. The guy said, well, you run the name in the computer. I said, really? And what happens when somebody steals someone's identity? We've had cases where one Social Security number and name were used by hundreds of people. Lots of luck. See, the only way to be certain is to be able to go out and do field investigations, and there's no way you could do a field investigation, not a background check, on millions of people. You couldn't do it on thousands, let alone millions, and forget about tens of millions. Basically, it's a free-for-all. You walk in, and you're on the honor system. It's like the way they used to give out credit cards. You know, congratulations, you've been pre-approved. This issue is so damn important, ladies and gentlemen. I am telling you that if, God forbid, there's another terrorist attack and you track it back, you will find that the people who come in to hurt us came in through either the visa waiver program, committing visa fraud, or running our borders. These are immigration issues that this administration and this Congress and prior administrations have absolutely failed to address. And if we, the people, don't make our government accountable, then we can expect more of the same madness. We are the employer. They are our employees, and everybody seems to have forgotten that. When you go to a restaurant, you're very specific about the way that you order your food, aren't you? You tell them exactly what you want to eat, the way you want it prepared. You need to be no less specific with your elected representatives, because otherwise they're not going to be able to represent you. There's some good guys out there, as I've told you. Just Senator Jeff Sessions, Senator Grassley, Mike McCall, Steve King, my hero Lou Barletta. But they need to hear from the American people. We need to support the good guys, and we need to apply incredible pressure on those who don't represent us and make it clear to them that they will find themselves on the unemployment line come the next election. That we will work tirelessly to get people ousted if they're not willing to defend the Constitution and our country and our lives and the futures of our children and our grandchildren. It's not about being nasty or making threats. The only threat that I would make to a member of Congress or a politician is that not only won't I vote for you, but I will work tirelessly to see to it that anybody, and I mean anybody, who runs against you will beat you. And that's the threat that really scares the hell out of them. What are your thoughts, Mark?
Well, you pretty much said it all. We need to hold all of our candidates to at least some degree of measure that they're actually going to look into this and then expect to hear some results from it. And then to, you know, one thing with like the T groups that are out there, that get them behind trying to hold your representatives accountable. Because, again, if they feel like they're going to lose their jobs because they will not go after this. Wasn't a poll just up, yesterday that stated that the majority of Americans actually are favorable to deportation?
Yeah, 60-odd percent, yep.
But why, when you watch the main media outlets, do you feel like if you mention anything like that, you're in the minority?
Well, because they are looking at the profit motive. These are stations that, for the most part, it's either they're appeasing their sponsors or they're appeasing corporate headquarters. ABC News is owned by Disney. Disney is part of the hotel, hospitality, and travel industry, and they're behind demanding increased numbers of visa waiver countries and so forth. And we can go right down the list where you can see that there is a conflict between reporting the news accurately and the profit side of the corporations that are behind the broadcast stations. There's a conflict of interest that most people don't realize. And understand the severity of the problem. The one point that I would suggest to all of you that are out there is this, though. We as a country have become so divided, and the rhetoric is so vile, it's pretty bad. The First Amendment, and Mark is the history professor here, so I'm going to ask you to give me a grade after I'm done with this. But I hope I don't flunk. I studied hard today. But, you know, the First Amendment doesn't just talk about freedom of press, freedom of speech, and freedom of religion. It also talks about the right to seek redress of grievances.
Right.
And boy, if ever there was a time that we had grievances, this is it. Terry Anderson, the late great talk show radio host who was a friend of mine, used to say, if you ain't mad, you ain't paying attention. And boy, it's never been more true than today. And it's also about the right for peaceable assemblage. It's right in the First Amendment, folks.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the Founding Fathers put it there, I believe, is because they thought and they understood that you could not have a democratic republic without debate, discourse, argument, disagreement, hopefully at some point consensus and compromise based on fact and based on persuasiveness. They said, go at it. Just leave your guns, your knives, and your clubs at home. Peaceable assemblage. We used to do it in town halls and in churches and synagogues and schools and in barns and in people's homes and under a shade tree on a nice warm day. Today we peaceably assemble on the internet, on talk radio, on this program. And that's why we need to not look at our neighbors who disagree with us as being our enemy. They're not our enemy. They are as entitled to their viewpoint, much as we think it might be wrong, as we are entitled to ours. The trick here is to win them over. When I was a kid, we used to have door-to-door salesmen come and visit. That's kind of gone the way of the dinosaur. But we used to have the fuller brush man, and we used to have the vacuum cleaner salesman, and they would all come to your house. They'd knock on the door. They were very polite. They were very ingratiating. You know, you don't sell anything to somebody by punching them in the nose. But they would try to convince you that they had a really great product, so you would give them the money, and they would sell you that product, and they'd walk away with money, and you had the product, and hopefully everybody was happy. Today, we need to look at our neighbors who disagree with us as our allies who simply need to be won over. We have got to be clear about our beliefs. We have to back them up with facts. And this vitriolic rhetoric has got to be toned down, folks. The other side, the people that are really behind this issue, driving the wagon that wants open borders, that wants amnesty programs, they are loving the fact that Americans are at each other's throat. Because while we're duking it out with our neighbors, they're walking all over us. More importantly, they're walking all over our country. So we need to sit down with our neighbors and have sensible, quiet, calm, reflective conversation. And I am telling you that the facts are on our side. I am telling you that the law and common sense and decency are all on our side. All we need to do is go back to those days when Americans were willing to stand up for what they believed in and got their voices heard. And we need to return to those days. What do I get? What's my grade? It's an open book test, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Of course, the one only other thing I would add would be, you know, the founders coming fighting out of the revolution as they were and all of the concerns that they had. They would rank file all of these bills of rights, and to be able to have the ability to assembly and to be able to speak openly, well, they actually felt that it could not occur without the Second Amendment.
I understand. But leave the guns home for these debates, folks. Okay.
Yeah, I know, but when you're going to read the Constitution and you try to put your mind back in 1787,
the Continental
people
Congress.
Need to think about what they had gone through to get to that point, which are some of the same issues we're thinking of today, to be able to speak openly, to be able to want to address grievances and be able to petition and feel that their petitions were being heard and by a legislative body that did represent them. And each one of those, if you tie that back to the Declaration of Independence and read the grievances that are in the Declaration of Independence, it's just like the Declaration of Independence is on the left side and then the Constitution being written is on the right. And you can see, well, this will fix that and this will fix this. And then you go and you look today at the problems in America and read the Declaration of Independence and look at the grievances against the king. And that is where I tell people that if that doesn't wake you up, I don't know what will.
That's an interesting point. But you see, what would you expect but a historic perspective from a professor of history.
Well, they just don't teach very much in terms of that time period as being too long ago. And some states don't even start U.S. history until after 1790. So
but look,
there isn't an American Revolution or French and Indian War or Constitutional Convention. You have Washington riding in with his horse as president.
But didn't you did you ever watch Jaywalking with Jay Leno, where they – you have kids today that are in college that don't even know who our enemies were in the Second World War?
Well, I've had, I don't know how many times people, you know, would say in class, I don't remember us ever learning this one before. And why didn't we know about that before? And, I would tell
remarkable.
Them, you need to ask that back in your hometowns.
Well, there's two books that people should read also. One is The Art of War. I just got a copy of it. It's amazing how stupid we're being in terms of squandering our treasury so we're not able to support our troops and so forth. The other book you should really get a hold of is 1984 by George Orwell.
Yes, that's a good one.
I think that they're both worth looking at. If you want to watch a great movie, try Network by Paddy Chayefsky. It was made back in the 70s, and boy, oh boy, this guy was really a man ahead of his time. That movie could air today, and it would be as relevant today as it was back when it first came out in the theaters.
Now,
Mark,
I've got to
tell you, it's been a joy having you on with me.
Well, thank you very much.
When are you going to start doing your own radio show again? You know, I used to be on Mark's radio show in North Carolina. They even had me come into the studio, and it was kind of fun. Mike and the two Marks. It almost sounds like a vaudeville act. You know?
Oh, you'll be there again, too. And,
well, I'm looking forward to joining you. I really want you to know, and I want you to tell Renee and all the other folks, Mike Prince and Greg and everybody, I am so proud to be a part of this film that you put together. I think it's probably the most important film I've seen in some time. And I want you folks to go out there and check this film out. And if you like it, forward the link. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Please see the movie. It's a short one. It's not that long. It's about 40, 42 minutes, I think. It's really a very, very well done film. You have a lot to be proud of. And that's the deal, folks. We're just trying to wake you up to provide you with the information you're not getting anywhere else.
I know.
Any last thought before we head for the weekend?
No, that's about it. It's about all my voice has left, I think.
Yeah, you sound like you're dying. You okay?
Well, I know. I guess today, I'm coming down with a cold, and after a day of teaching and then lots of talking. Sore throat, the whole nine yards.
Well, you don't have to be Jewish or a woman to be suffer Jewish mother syndrome. Get some chicken soup or at least tea with honey in it.
Yeah.
I hope you feel better, Mark.
As soon as I hang up.
I thank you for joining me with the last vestiges of your voice. And, folks, I thank you for joining me this evening, February the 22nd, for yet another Friday on the Michael Cutler Hour. Please make sure you get involved in government. Stay involved in the process. You know, I always like to end commentaries by reminding people that democracy is not a spectator sport, and it's never been more true than it is today. Please, folks, get involved. Our country is depending on you. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week. So long.